an interview with Governor Vic Gutilla at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is May 20th, 1993, and this is tape 26, side one. In our last session, we were talking about your appointments. You had just mentioned appointing Bob Smith to the executive department, and we talked about a few of your other close appointments. You also had some difficulties with some of your appointments too, and getting them approved by the legislature, by the Senate, or the entire legislature. Which is it?
No, just the Senate.
Just the Senate, and yeah. And that was something that had been passed recently, hadn't it?
Well, this advisory consent had been around for a long time, and as a legislator, the governor would make an appointment and. Then it would go to the committee that would relate to it. The name would go to the committee. And it was all very perfunctory. Chairman would have it, the governor's made this appointment, and he'd read the biographical stuff and do any of you know this person? Well, well, I've heard of him. Okay, you carry it then. And it was, you know, it was this sort of. Mm-hmm. So I was going through all this as a senator, and finally I said, now look, let's either do it or not do it. You know, mm-hmm. Which incidentally was one hell of a mistake. I didn't know I was going to be governor. And the very first one, we asked the person to come down mm-hmm. to Salem. That never happened before. And the very first one was Becky Johnson, Board of Higher Education. Oh, you know, what's going on? What's wrong? What's the Senate? You know, what's the, they would read. Put people on their heads. So I brought on my own misery. Well, the Senate kind of liked the looks of that one. They thought, well, heck, let's just do that. And so by the time I'm governor, they're into it real full-blown. The one that I really had a problem with was Kelly Wood, Department right. of Energy.
Right.
And Kelly was, incidentally, energy, as you know, and you do know because we'll get into it. Energy was a very important thing to me, and I had that mm-hmm. special mm-hmm. message which we delivered to the legislature. And Kelly was an eminently qualified person, knowledgeable. But you know, Ted Halleck and some others and this fellow knew something about nuclear power plants, and anyway, they got into it. It got worse. And matter of fact, I talked to Kelly and I said, Kelly, you know, you're getting a lot of abuse. You know, for me, I'm saying, hell with it. Let's hang tough and let the Senate do what they're going to do. But I don't want to put you through any abuse that you don't even need to go through. No, he said, I'll hang in there. And it got very apparent that we weren't going to have votes to do it. So they turned him down. And I got real upset about that.
Halleck said that he actually felt sorry for you because you didn't have anybody down there to support him. Was that true?
No, I'm not sure that that's true. But that wouldn't have made any difference. Uh-huh. Thank you for Ted Halleck even saying he was sorry for me. I don't recall Ted was ever sorry for me. But they turned him down and I got very angry. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to Senator Bowen and some other senators, and I said, now look, you know, this is my appointment. Now, if you tell me the person is not qualified, I can deal with that. But if you get into a philosophy, I can't deal with that. Because if you turn me down, then the only one I can get through is the one that matches the Senate philosophy. So the question is that my appointment or the Senate's appointment?
Mm-hmm.
That was my position. It was also interesting. I called another person, very well qualified, from Oregon State, talked to him about stepping in. And obviously, this turning down Kelly Wood was news. So I was asking, do you own any utility stock? Have you ever been involved in nuclear power plants? Anyway, I'm going on asking these questions. And finally, he says to me, Governor, it seems to me that you want somebody that doesn't own anything or know anything. I said, I guess you're right. Well, anyway, that really was, that was the major.
And you had to take over the department then, didn't you?
Briefly, until we got somebody to do that job.
What was the response to your argument that that it was basically a matter of philosophy and that should be left up to you?
Not an awful lot. Again, now, many times I had said that the legislature was not partisan. It was Democrat-controlled all during my 8 years. Mm-hmm. I always said that, but I didn't always mean it. If the same thing would have happened with Neil Goldschmidt, he would have been passed by the Senate, no doubt. I'm a Republican, and they got the votes, and away they went. So they just, there wasn't any particular reaction to it. I don't think they saw it in the same light that I did. And I would tell you, it wasn't a matter of Vicatia. I was a great one for process. When I was a legislator, well, just like I told you earlier on the advice of consent, I was a great defender of the legislative process. Mm-hmm. There are three branches of government. I consider them co-equal branches of government. And I feel very strongly about it. When I became an executive, I'm in the executive branch of government. And I feel very strongly about protecting the rights of the executive branch. It wasn't a matter of Vicatia, it was a matter of a governor and a legislature. Mm-hmm. And so to me, philosophically, that if they said the person wasn't qualified, I can deal with that.
Right.
Okay, so he's not qualified. We may disagree, but the fact is, it's the qualifications that we're after. Mm-hmm. Nothing beyond that. But when you asked me, they didn't react anyway.
But their main reason for rejecting him was over nuclear energy issues?
That's among the reasons. I don't know all of them. They just decided to get their bit in the teeth. They're going to teach the governor a lesson, and I don't know what. I can't, you know, get behind it. But that was one of the partisan things that would have happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, in that same area, then you also had some difficulty appointing people to the Energy Facility Siting Council as well.
Yeah, same idea.
Oregon Supreme Court Chief Justice Kenneth O'Connell, you had a problem with that appointment, and then with Harvey Ryswick? Is it Harvey Ryswick?
Oh, he's a labor guy.
Yeah, a union business agent ran into trouble.
They didn't think he was too smart.
Huh.
Those are bumpy roads that you go through. And every once in a while, the Senate gets the bit in their teeth, and they decide they're going to do it. But you have not seen the Senate turn down any of Neil Goldschmidt's appointments or Barbara Roberts. Mm. Do I need to? I really don't have to say any more than that. Mm-hmm. They haven't turned down any of theirs. Mm. As a matter of fact, the Senate approved some things that Neil Goldschmidt proposed. Not appointments, but government reorganization, they were absolutely stupid. Absolutely stupid. But Neil Goldschmidt wanted it, so he got it. Now, I'm not bitter about the whole thing. I understand it. I don't like it. That's not the way government should operate. That's not the way I operate, but then that's what goes on. Mm-hmm. And I had some problems. These are not problems that created wide gaps between us. I continued my communication, actually all 8 years, with the President, the Speaker, and the minority leaders on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. And everything went along.
Wasn't part of the problem with O'Connell that he owned stock in the three utilities that were planning to build the Pebble Springs nuclear power plant in Eastern Oregon? And that hadn't been disclosed prior to the the legislature. And I guess they were pretty angry about that. But did O'Connell ever discuss that with you prior to your nominating him?
That I don't recall. We may have talked about it because of the flap about Kelly Wood. Still, I'm operating under the theory, tell me he's not qualified. Mm-hmm. Don't tell me anything else. Tell me he's not qualified. Mm-hmm. Obviously a qualified person.
you had said at that point that you wouldn't make any more appointments until circus that is going on down there is straightened out. Was there any effort to straighten that out then? I mean,
just have to cool it, let them cool down a little bit, uh-huh. Let them get busy doing something else. You know, this is early in the session. A lot of these things are going through. The Senate doesn't have anything else to do.
Uh-huh.
So you wait till they start getting busy doing some other things.
You would think at
this
the
is not their main thing. They got other things to do.
You would think at the beginning of their session that they'd be extraordinarily busy trying to get bills.
No, it's all routine at that point. Bills being introduced, uh-huh. Being read, being sent to committee. There's no sessions. Generally, they meet in the morning, say hello, and adjourn. You know, it's just there's not much goes on the first month and a half.
Apparently, during that whole process, you had a rather heated discussion with Senate President Jason Bowe about trying to curb the committee headed by Fadley, who was the most outspoken opponent of nuclear energy. Did that get you off on a wrong footing with Bowe from on the beginning there of your?
No, Jason and I really got along together very well. I had others. I mean, I was really very angry, and I'd go see Jason, and we'd have it out. But that never really ever dampened our cooperation with uh-huh. each other. It wasn't a matter of I'm not going to talk to him anymore.
You'd had a pretty good relationship with him before?
A good relationship, yeah. Previously, too, and all during Jason's tenure there.
You wanted to replace two members of the Energy Facility Siting Council, there was a disagreement with Attorney General Jim Redden over over your reason for wishing to replace the two members of the Energy Facility Siting Council, and you, I believe, referred to the law that limits members of the council to two terms, and claimed that terms served on the agency's predecessor should disqualify them from reappointment. Do you recall?
I don't recall that specifically, but I do recall, again, my strong feeling that no one should serve more than two terms, mm-hmm. and that I was responsible as a legislator to change laws that related to this. I know specifically, I think Board of Higher Education was 6 years term and unlimited. Mm-hmm. And so we passed a law that made these things uniform and it'd be 4-year terms, not just for higher education. But where there were 4-year terms, and that they would be limited to two. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So now I've got a theory, a philosophy of how government ought to be. Again, my general feeling is that really there's no one that is indispensable, and that it's good and healthy to have things change. Mm-hmm. So that's where I would come from, but I don't remember that specifically.
You. Cut the salaries of your staff from Straub's level when you took over. Was that a general cost-cutting measure, or were you?
No, just what I believed in terms of what people ought to be paid. I call myself a cheap retailer. You know, you look at some of the salaries that are being paid in this way out of line. That's the reality. That's one of the values, I say, of coming from business, and the dollar is worth something, and you take that into account. We also cut size of staff. People work real hard. Again, I'm thinking to myself, well, I was a retailer. I worked hard. You know, people can work harder than they're working. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you cut staff, still got plenty of staff for the work that's required.
Mm-hmm. How did your wife Dolores fit into her role as the governor's wife, and what was that role?
Well, she did very well. I'm I know that she would have preferred to be home instead of what we were going through. But all during the 8 years, she was exceptionally good. She had her own causes, quietly worked at them. I know that she's very proud about immunization before you get into school, thinking it's important that children be immunized. Did the kinds of things that were of interest to her. I've kidded an awful lot. She does very well when she goes out among people and goes mm-hmm. to groups. And I'd say that they would try to get Dolores, and if they couldn't get her, then they'd try for me. She did very well. It was something that she said, okay, I'm here. She never told me this. I'm here, and I'm just going to do the best job I know how. And she did very well at it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Groups would come to the house, and she'd deal with that. Do a lot of it herself. It was tough work. That's interesting. I don't know if we covered that, but all the furniture in the house and all of the dishes and all the pots and pans and silverware, they were ours. We moved them down there. Mm. And whenever there was anybody coming in, she was just like anyone else. At home, she'd get ready for it. She'd make the cookies. She would do it. When they had particularly large ones that we would not get in a cater, but people thought that the governor has all kinds of help, and they also thought we had a mansion. And I think I did tell you that I rented the house and they raised my rent. But she was very good at it, very good. And I think, I don't think she would use the term, but maybe I'd say long-suffering. She did it quietly and went ahead and did it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And maybe I'm over-exaggerating, but obviously you can't help but enjoy it. I mean, she is First Lady and respected and liked for that. And a lot of people liked her. Most people liked her because she was a very, very fine, very, very pleasant woman.
How about the rest of your family?
I think they were proud of it. Meeting my son and daughter, as you see in my—I don't know if you got to my farewell, but I just said to them, "I hope I didn't cause you too much trouble." It was a problem, as they were growing up. I recall specifically that Suzanne applied for a job down at the Marine Science Center, and some woman called me up, and her son had applied, and she was indignant, that my daughter, she's going to get the job, and my son's more qualified. I said to her, look, I'm not asking for special favors. I'm just asking for equal treatment. Mm-hmm. My daughter, she's applied for it.
Yeah.
And let her make it or not, it depends on it. So at times like that, at times I know I've heard of it, the teachers would kind of jump on my children. Maybe they didn't like what I was doing or something.
Were they living, were any of them living, or other than living at the mansion while you were?
No, no. Tom was out married and Suzanne was out at school, mm-hmm. but we had a room for her. She was not yet married, but there was Suzanne's room in the house, but she didn't use it very much. She was away at school.
Uh-huh. Well, from here we go on into the 79 legislative session, the 60th assembly. Is there anything else in terms of your getting ready for the session, getting ready for your first term in office that you would want to mention at this point?
The inaugural address.
Okay.
All right, that in your list?
That's different from the State of the State address, isn't it?
That's correct.
I've got your state of address here, but I go ahead and tell me at this point right now about your inaugural address then, because that
I had two inaugural addresses.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Each time I was elected, I had an inaugural address.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Then everything in between was a state of the state.
Right. Which was at each year?
Each year. Now, that would have been 1980, I would have had one.
Uh-huh.
Not 79, 80, 81, 82, and then in, wait a minute, yeah, 82. Then 83, I had another inaugural address.
Mm-hmm.
And then 84, 5, and 6, I had State of the States. The reason I particularly mention that, when a governor prepares to make an address of this kind, whether it's an address I have to make a little distinction, I guess. There's an address to the legislature in between elections, and then there is a State of the State, which is a separate speech, but be that as it may. You know, you have a choice of how you want to approach it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I didn't really study any previous ones, but as I've heard other governors, you know, you have a litany. This is what I want. These are the budgets. This is the direction, and all the rest of that sort of thing. I decided I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to have this menu of offerings to the legislature. What I wanted to do was to deal with the question philosophically. This is how you approach government. This is the way you do things. And I'll be very frank and tell you, I was most anxious to deliver that speech. I could hardly wait to deliver that speech. I really wanted to deliver that speech. I was quite excited about it. I had assistants. We had a speech writer. We sat down and talked. We had several drafts of the speech. I expressed myself. They took notes and helped frame the speech.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally massaged it down to the delivery speech that I made. And I've said many, many times, I've told members of the media, I'll tell you, if you want to really know who Vicatia is, you go look at my inaugural address, first inaugural address.
Mm.
Because I was expressing my views on how we ought to do people's business. That's why I want to bring it up. It was important to me, but I was very excited. I wanted to go deliver it. I think it's a good speech.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, guns didn't go off and skyrockets in the air, but I think fundamentally, I think it was a very good speech, content, and the way it was expressed.
Was it well received?
It was well received, but you know, it's a new governor and mm-hmm. people are happy and except the Democrats, and it was well received, but I'm not sure how much they took it to heart.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, it was one of that's the reason you say anything else. I want to bring it up because it was both important, my approach to it, philosophical rather than a menu, and it really did express my views of government.
Was that at the where you were talking about how government had grown arrogant toward the people, and the answer is that the government needs to listen to the people and be more responsive?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
I could quote several things from it that I think, you know, we're more interested in the form of things rather than substance. That's in there. And they get all, you know, what is the form? How's the chart look? I'm not interested in that. What I'm interested in is, you know, what's it going to do for people?
Mm-hmm.
Keep reminding my state agencies all during my terms, you know, why are you in business? You're not in business for yourself. You're in business for the people. That's why you're in business. That's why we're there. We're
mm-hmm.
not there for any other reason.
Mm-hmm.
And government, including legislature, even today, you know, really, it's just awful hard to penetrate that wall in Salem. It's very hard to penetrate that wall in Salem.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, hey, listen, I use the word kaleidoscope in that speech. Having gone through that experience, you've got different bills coming at you all the time. My problem, as a legislator, a voting legislator, I may vote on an ag bill in February. Then sometime in April, another ag bill would come down. And I kind of have to remember, you know, I want to put this all together. I don't want it in pieces. I want to know what's this ag bill do to the ag bill that I voted on before. And not too many people would go through that kind of exercise, but that's what I'm constantly trying to make sure I got the right package in mind. It's not easy, but that's what I would try to do. That's what I was trying to tell them. You know, as these things cascade down on you, maybe in a different way I was saying what I told you very early on, and I know I've since repeated, a set of principles and common sense. That's basically coming at it. That's how you come down.
You were also calling for less government spending and less government regulation.
That's right. I made the distinction in that speech, and it was a matter of regulation, not strangulation. And where we were really, we're in strangulation mode, not in the regulation mode.
There was one interesting sentence here in the speech where you said, where the people ask for protection, let us protect them. Where they ask for assistance, let us assist them. And where they ask to be left alone, let us leave them alone. Mm-hmm. And that's, in a nutshell, what you're talking about, the less spending, less regulation.
Absolutely. You have to do it. I've never said there should be no government, because I clearly know there's a need for it. It's just a matter of how much government.
Mm-hmm. You were also sorry.
Go ahead. That's all right.
You were also calling for volunteerism too.
Yes.
And replacing social programs. You know, you're in a way. It seems like your path is coinciding with the same kind of message that Governor Reagan was calling for, did you associate yourself with the movement that he was a part of as well?
No.
You saw it as being different or parallel?
No, I never even thought about it. Uh-huh. I mean, it never entered my mind. I was expressing myself. Mm-hmm. I was not influenced by Reagan or anybody else. Mm-hmm. I'm just expressing myself from all the years and all the philosophies and everything that I grew up with and all the things we talked about before. Right. That was me. That's who I was, and I was expressing myself and my particular views of government and the role of government. Mm-hmm. I am not one that believes that government is smarter than the people. I don't believe that. Mm-hmm. I believe that, and I may have said this before, that people, given the right information, will make fewer mistakes then the legislature will.
Why is that?
I don't know. I can't answer it. Mm-hmm. Except that they live out there with their daily lives, mm-hmm. and they have to deal with common sense and reality, and the legislature lives in this box in Salem. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me to determine that. If you put everything to the vote of the people, a lot of bills the legislature pass will never pass out there. Mm-hmm. They never pass out there.
Did you feel that you had a closer pulse on the people than
yes.
the legislature?
Yes.
Why is that?
I listened. Uh-huh. In my speech also, and I firmly believe this, is the words common voice of Oregon. And there is such a thing, but you have to listen. Not politicians, but a lot of people, they're not really listening to you. They're thinking about what they're going to tell you next. Mm-hmm. They're not listening to what you're saying. They're thinking what they're going to say next. And so they're kind of shielded from really listening to what people have to say. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was kind of disgusted with Governor Roberts and this electronic conversation with Oregonians. That's not the way to listen to Oregonians. That's not the way to do it. Everybody that came to these electronic discussions had their own agenda for, against, or mm-hmm. whatever. That's why they were there. Mm-hmm. They weren't there just, I get a chance to talk to the governor. That's not why they were there. Those kind of people thought, I'll never get a chance to talk to the governor, make any difference. You got to go out to where they are, mm-hmm. which isn't that hard in Oregon.